Hello, Jim?
Yes, I'm here.
You're there, and there is Chicago again, but you were in Vienna.
I was in Vienna, and it's a long plane ride.
Okay, but you...
But I'm back.
And you got some sleep before. Could you first introduce yourself, please?
Yes, I'm Jim Gearock. I'm a former prosecutor in Chicago and municipal attorney, and I'm the executive vice chairman of the LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, organization, which is a group, of course, that is opposed to the war on drugs, not because drugs are good, but because the war on drugs doesn't work.
And you went to Vienna because...
I went to Vienna because 3 years ago I learned by going to Vienna at the Commission on Narcotic Drugs that the fountainhead for prohibition, drug prohibition for the world, is the United Nations. And it has a Commission on Narcotic Drugs that meets once a year to try to better formulate drug policies for the world within the context of the three drug prohibition treaties that really govern the world and the nations of the world, requiring them to criminalize drugs. And so I went 3 years ago and learned how bad things were, and then the next 2 years I followed back to try to change things. This year, LEAP went with a proposed treaty amendment calling for the amendment of these three prohibition treaties, and so I spent most of the last 12 days or so trying to garner support for those treaty changes.
So how did you do?
Well, actually, I think really, really well. You know, many parts of the world are in an uproar because of the failure of the war on drugs. It doesn't matter where you go, what country. The war on drugs has made the drug problem worse and made many other problems, the violence and corruption and other things that come with prohibition. It makes them so much worse. So people are looking for change, and national leaders are recognizing people want change. So when I talked to drug czars, which I did from the Czech Republic, Portugal, Brazil, many countries around the world, Ecuador, the drug czar, particularly in Ecuador, wants to sign on to this petition for amendments. He kind of joked with me at one point as I was explaining it to him, and he's got the booklet in his hand. He said, you know, you're stealing our stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I said, wonderful. So I'm really optimistic that some country, it only takes one country to file a proposed amendment that says we should end the criminalization model, we should put in place a health, harm reduction, and human rights type paradigm rather than this prohibition model we have in place now. And that would start the wheels moving under all three UN drug prohibition treaties.
But Jim, how come that hasn't happened yet? Because as you told me a few weeks ago, there are some countries already where all drugs are regulated, so decriminalized.
That's correct. Portugal is certainly one of them in about, I think it was 2001, where personal amounts of drugs, not big quantities, but something for personal consumption, they're not going to arrest you for. They're not saying it's legal and it's okay, but they're not arresting you. And, of course, it was predicted drug use and crime and violence and other things would go up dramatically in Portugal. And, of course, exactly the opposite has happened.
Mm-hmm.
One of the curious things about drug policy is what seems like a good idea really is a bad idea, and what seems like a bad idea might be a good one.
No, but how come that such a country is not somehow punished then by the United Nations for not repressing people?
You know, I think one of the ways that some of the bigger countries exert influence on smaller countries in the world is they threaten them and they intimidate them. And oftentimes their bluff is not called. So, for example, a couple of years ago, Bolivia, that has a long history with the coca leaf, and many people living in the Andes need to chew the coca leaf to get through the day. And it's not like cocaine, though cocaine comes from the coca leaf. And so they amended the constitution in Bolivia to say that the president would do his utmost to protect the historical, cultural, medical, and religious basis of the coca leaf. So President Morales of Bolivia came to the United Nations 2 years ago and said, listen, we're a part of these drug prohibition treaties, but I really need your concession and help so that we don't outlaw the coca leaf, because, number one, our people don't follow it, our constitution supports the coca leaf, and the coca leaf is not cocaine. And if you don't give us relief from that part of the conventions, then we're going to withdraw from the treaties. and everybody thought, well, this little country is going to be punished in multiple ways. Well, the country wasn't punished. They came back a year later and re-signed and rejoined the United Nations drug prohibition treaties with a reservation and exemption for the cocoa plant. So oftentimes these smaller countries are intimidated by the United States, Russia, Japan, Sweden, China, the countries that push for a retention of the status quo of drug prohibition worldwide.
But how do you get in there? I mean, I looked up this 57th session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs, and there was a list of participants, but I didn't see your name. There was a long, long, long list, but...
Well, actually, I've got the list here, and my name is in it. It's a list of NGOs, and the NGOs, I'm listed not under LEAP, but under the American Civil Liberties Union.
Okay.
In order for an NGO to go and to participate at the United Nations, you must first have what they call consultative status. And LEAP, although it makes some 2,000 presentations to groups around the world each year, the UN has done its best to frustrate LEAP attaining consultative status. But that was recommended here just a couple of months ago, and we expect them to take the final vote in April or somewhere between April and June of this year.
So you don't have to stand by the doorway and catch people there. You can actually participate as...
Correct.
Okay.
The other interesting thing was this year, LEAP co-sponsored what they call a side event with Students for a Sensible Drug Policy. They talked about how we can protect youth from drugs in a better fashion. So LEAP was there. LEAP participated. We had four board members, a former judge from Brazil, myself, a former spy from the United Kingdom, a former police officer from Europe.
Are there many side events always?
Oh, there are. All during this past week, there were side events in the morning. Usually there's two in the morning, and then there's two in the afternoon time slots. And so you might have four different side events going on at the same time in any given segment, time segment.
So what are these all about? Are those all organizations that want a change in the policy?
Yes. Well, these are side events generally sponsored by NGOs, but they'll take a particular topic. Like one was opiate production in Tajikistan. A number of them were where they had a particular drug problem in a particular geographic area. An NGO may hold one I know concerned the reduction of prison sentences for people who are convicted of drug offenses. So many, many harm reduction proposals. We should have more needle exchange programs. We should have better methadone access. You know, harm reduction. We should have clean needles, reduce the spread of AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, before this conference started, we, LEAP, drafted a treaty amendment that would have eliminated the prohibition and criminalization model that's in place now.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have replaced it by reinvesting the nations of the world with national sovereignty so that they could decide what is the best drug policy for their particular country without just doing what the United Nations treaties dictated, which, of course, is criminalization and build more jails and lock more people up. And this proposed treaty amendment would have also put in place a health model and a harm reduction model, and a human rights model, so that instead of the International Narcotics Control Board, one of the UN agencies, spending its time counting how many cocoa plants and marijuana plants we have in the world, instead we recast their duties and responsibilities, and we would have them instead looking to see how many needle exchange programs there were in the world and how they were funded and what the effect of the programs was in reducing HIV and AIDS and hepatitis B and C infections. How many heroin-assisted treatment programs are there in the nations of the world, and what nations, and how much money are they spending on them? And what effect is it having on the reduction of heroin deaths? How many safe injection facilities are there? How many methadone facilities?
Mm-hmm.
What's the availability of naloxone? And is it over-the-counter, or you need a prescription when it's often too late? Or can the police actually carry naloxone to reverse a heroin overdose? How many persons have been released from prison because of a modification of the sentencing and drug laws around the world? How many people are in prison for nonviolent drug offenses and for the use of sale of drugs? What is the availability of drug treatment in different countries around the world? How long do people have to wait when they decide they want drug treatment? So we've completely revamped the role. Instead of this being a police organization to make sure that people don't use drugs around the world, we're going to use this as an organization to prevent the harm from drug use around the world.
And monitor and provide statistics about all those initiatives, all those policies.
That's exactly correct. One of the things that we would do is annually require this board and the Commission on Narcotic Drugs to determine what is the most dangerous drug in the world and the relative comparative harm that's caused by other substances. So right now the UN drug treaties don't cover tobacco and they don't cover alcohol, which of course are two of the biggest killers. So this proposal that we have every March when the Commission on Narcotic Drugs meets in Vienna, what they would do is annually review, approve, disapprove, modify the International Narcotic Drug Controls ranking of the most dangerous drugs by specific drug type and common street name, tobacco, alcohol, heroin, and then rank them by nation, continent, and regions to determine what is the most dangerous drug in different parts of the world, ranked, as I say, by area, country, and so forth. And the first and foremost criteria to determine the most dangerous is the lethality. How many people are dying, the morbidity rates associated with those particular drugs, and then giving the actual numbers of how many people died from that drug. And then secondly, considering the commonality of each of the drugs. So in other words, you may have a very lethal drug, but if hardly anybody uses it, well, then it probably shouldn't be ranked the most dangerous because we don't have so many people dying.
Mm-hmm.
And third, taking into account other factors like the likelihood of physical harm to the user for a particular substance, and then the addictive potential of the drug, and then the change in the prevalence of that drug use for that particular drug in comparison to the prior year. So this would every year force the Commission on Narcotic Drugs to do a reevaluation of what is the most dangerous drug in a particular country, in a particular area, in a particular continent.
And so also what their focus should be.
Exactly, because if you don't annually retake stock, because things change. I mean, for a while it's an epidemic of heroin, and then it switches to meth. Right now, the fastest growing drug use in the world is methamphetamines. And last year when I was at this Commission on Narcotic Drugs, they said we had 60 tons of meth seized worldwide. Well, I mean, that tells you we've got a bad meth program. And what are the rules concerning meth? Well, we're prohibiting them, increasing the penalties to make them the same as cocaine and heroin, which makes the availability increase so that it's as big a problem as cocaine and heroin.
Because it becomes more profitable.
Right, so it's worse instead of better. But if we see from year to year that we've got a policy in place that's making the problem worse worldwide, well, that tells us we need to do something different.
And can you hear somebody saying that on these sessions who is not from an NGO?
Well, are there participants other than NGOs? Is that your question?
Yes, I mean, you are an NGO and there are other NGOs organizing side events and discussing the policy and it should be different. But, well, you're only in side events, so you don't really have a vote, do you?
Well, that's correct. We absolutely do not have a vote, and historically it's been very difficult for NGOs to participate in the process of deciding what drug policy should be. For example, there's the International Drug Policy Consortium that's a collective of NGOs that are all interested in removing the criminalization model. They're in favor of making drug policy health-based, harm reduction, and human rights-based. So many of the groups had read the proposals before we got to Vienna and were very well aware of what was in it.
But what surprises me most is that the official people participating in those sessions have been continuing with this policy for decennia while they see it's not working. How can they continue on a path when they see it's leading nowhere?
Raymond Yans is the head of the International Narcotic Control Board, and he was holding an expert panel with about six or seven doctors and himself who were in one big room. And at the same day, about an hour apart, was a different meeting where they had people from Colorado, state of Washington, and one was the old world drug policy, and the other room was the new world drug policy. In the old world drug policy, the experts were saying that new synthetic drugs are being produced at an ever-increasing rate, and that this year there was 100 new synthetic drugs invented by chemists and drug dealers, because when you invent a new drug, it can't be in the list of prohibited things because they just invented it. Mm-hmm. So there's an incentive to avoid the penalties, the draconian penalties imposed by drug prohibition. They're inventing new drugs at an ever-quickening rate. 2 years ago, there were 43 new drugs. Last year, they said they had 50-some new synthetic drugs. And this year, there's 100 new drugs. So the drugs are being created faster than they can add them to the list. And so then Yuratov, Fedotov, and Yance are still supporting the three prohibition treaties that caused this result. And then in contrast, down the hall, and about a half an hour later, is this completely new thought where it's better to control and regulate drugs, for government to collect taxes, for drug users to know what they're consuming. And it was such a dichotomy where one room they're trying to protect the status quo, protect their jobs, protect the $500 million a year institution, which is the United Nations Office of UNODC, United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime. And their programs are the fastest growing programs in any United Nations program, spending $500 million a year. And when you walk down the hallways where I am in Vienna, and of course you can't do that because you can't get in because you got to have tags and you got to apply months in advance, and they limit the accessibility of the press. But on these tables are piles and piles of expert documents written about drugs in this part of the world and that part of the world. And they're all well done, of course, and they just detail the failure of the war on drugs. But people are earning money doing those things, just as the police earn money by taking the drug dealers' money and boats and planes, and now the police own the boats and the planes and the money. Mm-hmm. And it's used, of course, for overtime and hiring more police. And then the people who are getting in the drug treatment business are receiving more and more money because of the way we organize this spending of money. Mm-hmm. And so if you've got a drug testing facility, you're making a ton of money.
So it's vested interests. I was amazed to see how many people are participating in this. So, from all countries, there is a large delegation. It started with Afghanistan, 15 people from Afghanistan, from which, by the way, five had names that were obviously not Afghanic, or how, what you call it in English.
A lot of Irishmen. I'm just joking. But, you know, because it's true. I mean, people with expertise in education, well, they get hired by these countries. But here's an interesting observation that occurred to me this year as I'm there. And I'm looking and listening to the representatives of different countries talk. And the countries that are in favor of maintaining the status quo are countries that normally can't agree on anything. Who wants to continue the war on drugs the way it is? The United States. Who else? Russia. Who else? China. Who else? Japan. Who else? Sweden.
Sweden.
Some of the most regressed policies in the world are being supported by supposedly the freedom capitals of the world, and then the countries which are less inured to notions of freedom. Mm-hmm. So it's really pathetic, and you have to hope that some smaller nation in the Caribbean or in South America or Central America or some European country is going to have the courage to stand up to the giants of the world and say that we're through killing our people with this drug policy that's failed for over 50 years.
Maybe it will come from Belgium. We'll give it a try.
I really hope so.
We have now a new mayor since 1 year and a half who is going in the other direction. Well, but
also, the Social Democratic Party put it in there. We have elections soon, and the Social Democratic Party put removal of the use of cannabis, I think, from illegality in their program. But they got a lot of tough criticism from not only from competing political parties, but also in the press. So the atmosphere.
Well, that's movement. When even a leader stands up and says this is what we should do, or they're trying to earn public office by saying this is what we should do instead. But the power is in the people. eventually politicians always have to do what the people say. And the problem with drug prohibition these last 50-some years is the people wanted it. The nations of the world turned on this prohibition engine, and they asked for prohibition, and they've got it. And the consequences are we have drugs seized by the tons, we have kids overdosing, we have more drugs, more dangerous drugs, uncontrolled and unregulated drugs. We've got drug internment camps in some places that Human Rights Watch is criticizing, for example, in China. And I don't mean to pick on China. I mean, the United States has become the prison capital of the world because of this crazy war on drugs. And yet these leaders are in favor of it. But the people in referendums in Colorado and Washington and 20 of the 50 states in the United States are saying we should have medical marijuana. Uruguay is standing up and saying we're legalizing marijuana. And they're doing it because the people are saying that this is a failed policy and we want to regulate and control these drugs that are too dangerous to prohibit and surrender the control of these substances to drug cartels and street gangs. And that's why things are getting better.
Okay. So keep us posted. Jim, thank you for your time so early in Chicago. It's 8 o'clock now, I think.
Yes, yes, but help save us. We certainly need your help saving America from itself.
Thank you.
Well, we got your president visiting us next week, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, he's doing a little bit better. He's saying, you know, we have, instead of jury nullification, we have executive branch nullification, where he says these laws are so bad, U.S. attorneys don't charge nonviolent drug offenders with these draconian drug sentences that require the judges to send them away forever.
Well, I don't think he came here to say that, but we'll see. Okay.
I hope so.
Bye. Enjoy your day. Bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much, Bob.